Dialectical Behavior Therapy was created in the 1980s by Marsha Linehan in Seattle, Washington.
Today, DBT is taught all over the world.
We're two therapists who believe everyone can benefit from DBT skills.
I'm Kate.
I'm Michelle.
And this is DBT and Me.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, everybody.
If you are very shockingly observant, you might have noticed that Kate and I alternate typically who does the intro for each episode. 1 month Kate will do it, then the next month I will do it, etc., etc. And last month I did the intro, and this month I am also doing the intro because we're actually recording these two episodes, within a couple weeks of each other, but Kate's still not feeling very well, so I don't know if you want to share anything about that, Kate, before I keep going, but I figured I would take on extra work today for her, give her a little bit of a break from talking.
Yeah, between, like, my stomach stuff, and then I had, you guys, people who are listening will understand something of what this means. My mom visited for 4 days, and now I seem to have come down with some sort of sinus infection and maybe mono again. I don't even know. My body is a shit show. Right now, guys, so just be nice, and I apologize, because I swear to goodness, I don't even know. I have a hard time forming English sentences and sitting upright today. I am fatigued. No one says enervated, Kate. I am fatigued as fuck. There you go. I like alliteration anyway. So if I sound less enthusiastic and also perhaps duller than usual, I'm currently slowly listing over to the side as I'm talking to Michelle. So, yeah, I am captain of the struggle bus. I am. That's what I am. Yeah. I'm captain of the struggle bus today, and I appreciate everybody's kindness in advance. Thank you, Michelle, for taking on some extra and catching if I end up being a little bit moronic at times.
Oh, yeah. I'm just glad you're here so I don't have to talk into a microphone by myself for like an hour plus. So any talking, any help is very much appreciated.
That's true. It has been fucking bizarre. You've had to do one by yourself, and I've had to do one by myself at least, right? I think, have we both had to? I know I've had to.
You definitely have. I actually don't think I have ever had to podcast myself.
It's very strange. I will give you that. It is weird, since you and I are so used to doing this together, to just not have another face and another voice. Yeah. It is strange. That's true.
Exactly. So I'm glad I'm not in that position today. And it also just so happens that, like, we picked a whammy of a topic, like a big one. last month we talked about, like, recovering from validation. I feel like we've had a couple months with the topics that have been pretty easy to talk about, not too intense. Today is more of an intense one, I think, anyways. There's some research that we had to do for this episode, and we're really diving into talking about mindfulness and wise mind in a new way, right? So there are some handouts in the DBT manual that we're going to be referencing and talking about further, but the topic of this episode is mindfulness and wise mind from a spiritual perspective, and what that means, and how you can practice mindfulness and find your wise mind through this lens of spirituality. And it just feels like a really big topic because, I don't know, I think at least for me, I want it to make sense to everybody listening, whether you identify as religious or spiritual or whether you don't. I hope that there's going to be something to take away from this episode that you learn or think about differently. And there's just a lot of verbiage in the handouts that is, I don't know. I think just like requires some explanation and some digging into more. And so there's a lot that we're going to be talking about today. So again, kudos to Kate for even just being here, even if I'm going to be doing a little more talking than she is, because it's a pretty daunting topic as it is. And it would definitely be a daunting one to be talking about solo. So I'm glad I'm not talking about it solo. But before we get into what this episode is going to look like more, let's promote ourselves, shall we? As we've been starting off most of the promotional stuff, we're still pretty over the moon about the book. I don't think we'll ever stop being over the moon about the book, and hoping that it's something that people are, you know, it's been out for a few months now, so hopefully if you've purchased it, you've gotten a chance to read it or at least get started, and you can find it on Amazon in Kindle form and audiobook form and paperback form. So the link, all the links are in the show notes, as we've been saying, but go on and get the book if you haven't already. It would really mean a lot to us. If you want to become a patron, you can sign up for becoming an ongoing supporting patron by going to patreon.com/dbtandme. We had a number of new patrons last month, which was really exciting. And so if you want to donate either $2 a month or $5 a month to support what we're doing with the podcast, that also means a whole lot to us. You can also check out our Etsy shop. We have mugs, we have shirts, all things cool that are DBT related. So the link for Etsy's in the show notes too. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, give us a rating or write us a review. Let us know what you think and how we're doing. And also send us emails. Emails could be a great way for us to receive feedback as well. dbtandmepodcast@gmail.com. And just, yeah, writing us in with questions. We love that as well. And the last thing, which I will actually reference here very briefly too before we dive in. So check out our other podcast if you haven't already, The Couch and the Chair, wherever you're currently listening to us. Kate and I actually recorded a very in-depth episode about our own journeys with religion or spirituality or lack thereof back in May of 2022. So if you want to know more about Kate and I's background when it comes to this topic of religion and spirituality, or if you're, I don't know, if you're kind of in a place yourself of exploring, like, what is it that I believe? What fits for me? What doesn't fit for me when it comes to belief systems like this? We recorded a whole episode. It's actually, honestly, no joke, it's truly one of my favorite The Couch and the Chair episodes, our episode about religion and spirituality. I feel very proud of that episode that we put out. So if you want to know more about, again, it's a lot of personal sharing on our part, but you can find that episode. Again, it was posted May 6th, 2022 in The Couch Jesus of the Chair. Christ. So way back, a long time ago, but it's a good episode to listen to. So you can check that out if you want. Because the way we were thinking of structuring today, we're each going to start off with just sharing like the briefest of histories of what our own like religious and spiritual journeys have looked like. Then you just know a little bit what each of us are bringing to the table. Try as we might to be unbiased and objective as possible. I mean, the reality is that we're each people who have experiences in this area, right? All of us receive messages around religion or spirituality in some way, shape, or form. And so we want to just share a little bit of background about ourselves. And then we're going to talk about mindfulness from a spiritual perspective first. And then we're going to talk about wise mind from a spiritual perspective. Like I said, there's a lot to pack in today. So we had it in the notes when we were originally planning for Kate to do the intro that I would share first with my religion and spiritual background. So we're just going to keep it that way. I'm just going to keep talking your ears off here.
Thank you.
And share my background, before Kate shares hers. So, basically, again, I'm going to try to keep this really brief. So my entire family, my parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, etc., all identify as some brand of Christianity. Most of them very, very strongly would say that their identity as a Christian is really central to who they are. Specifically for me, I was raised in the Episcopal Church. If you don't know what the word Episcopal means or Episcopalian, it's similar to Catholicism. There's just some things that are different, right? You don't do confession. You don't have some restrictions. Like, for example, women can be priests. Gay people can be priests. You know, things that are not okay in the Catholic religion. So it's a bit more of a liberal form of Catholicism. That's what it means to be Episcopal. So I was raised going to church every single Sunday, you know, Sunday school, youth group, the whole bit. And I also went to a small private school from kindergarten through eighth grade. That was more, I guess you could say, like mainstream Christianity. I briefly attended a mega church when I was in high school, because I had a crush on a guy who went, so I went too. But basically, it was just kind of this expected thing that, like, of course I was Christian because I went to a Christian school and because I have a Christian family and all of that. And where I'm at now, I don't identify as Christian anymore, but I've struggled to figure out like what else I identify as. I do still really enjoy going to church on certain religious holidays and that kind of a thing. But I do believe in God. I just don't believe necessarily in a Jesus figure. If that makes sense. I think it was you, Kate, who said that makes me a deist. I think deist. That was the term.
Yep.
Yeah, somebody who believes in God.
Yep. God, yep.
And you, I can't remember if it was you or someone else, also introduced me to the term omnist, which is like somebody who sees value in all religions. Mm. And believes that like they're all equal, they all have merit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that definitely fits for me. So I don't really feel like I necessarily have like a religious or spiritual home. I'm going to be talking some about this today in the episode. I've definitely engaged in a lot of kind of more woo-woo spiritual practices over the last like 7 years. Thanks to my therapist who like taught me what chakras were and things like that, you know, terms that I'd never heard of. And so I definitely dabble at times in some more woo-woo spiritual practices and find a lot of healing there. But yeah, I don't really have a good label necessarily for like what my belief system currently is, but that's the background that I come from. And then that's where I'm at today. So that's me.
I think the other thing we've brought up, Michelle, is whether or not for you, God has an explicitly masculine connotation.
Yeah, we have talked about, I still, and again, I don't know why it's, I think just so entrenched from growing up, like God does still feel masculine to me.
Right. I always think that's interesting, right? Like there's so much there.
I don't know how to like shape that. Like I don't view him as like an old man with like a white beard or anything necessarily, but like, yeah, God does still feel very
You have like masculine or fatherly energy rather than feminine or motherly energy.
Yeah, I do. And I have a feeling that definitely at some point I'll probably dig into that for myself a little bit more, because I do feel in some way like that's outdated, but I just haven't like you know, like I'm in that limbo state, right? Of like, well, this is what I've known my whole life or what I've been taught. And then it's like, well, I don't know, but I haven't transitioned into like what actually fits. So yes, that is true for
me. That makes perfect sense to me. And I think actually is a good lead-in-ish, because I think my whole story right now is just a story of in transit also. I don't know where I'll land. I was not raised at all religiously or spiritually. I would say that the vast majority of my family, if you go to extended family, they identify somewhere between a mixture of atheist and agnostic, most of them. For a while, Michelle, my two aunts and their families, I guess, my maternal aunts, were, I think, also actually Episcopalian. I think. Oh, I don't think they were actually Catholic. It was just Catholic-esque.
Yeah, probably Episcopal then.
Sorry, guys. As per usual, Jin is managing to make an appearance and make it at the worst possible time and make it so that it, you know, interrupts podcasting because that is his modus operandi. So I'd got some very brief exposure to religion when I visited them a couple of times, but to me that meant religion was sitting around in a room singing with my auntie because she ran the Sunday school.
Like the Sunday school?
Yeah. So sitting around singing Christian stuff with my auntie and then going in and getting to eat a cracker and have some grape juice, and that was pretty much what I took away from the experience. And they were out of that by the time I was older, so for most of the rest of my life, I would say my mom leans a little woo-woo. My dad is hardcore atheist, but also believes, apparently, in things like psychic powers, which shocked the shit out of me to find out in my 30s. I could not have named a person in my family I thought less likely to believe in that, so that was shocking. But yeah, I'm not raised in anything, so definitely don't carry any of that with me, other than what I carry with me is a bit of a prejudice against religion and religiosity and religious practices and organized religion, in large part because other than those few experiences with my aunties, most of my experiences of religion have been being persecuted by religious people for being queer and weird of other fashions. So a lot of my exposure to religion and religion. I can't say that. I've had almost no exposure to Judaism or Islam or other, the other Abrahamic religions, right? Like most Americans, even though I am not Christian, I am steeped in Christianity because it's everywhere around here. And so I should say that my exposure to Christianity was originally filled with a lot of hatred and violence and nastiness. So that was what I carried with me for a long time. It's one of my bigger prejudices that I've had to work on consciously and intentionally as an adult and especially as a therapist, because I carry my knee-jerk reaction is to have a negative response to anybody saying that they're Christian or really religious of almost any ilk. And I have to work on that personally. And where I am now is something closer to the woo-woo side of things. I would say that I have I currently have a lot of spiritual practices and not a lot of spiritual beliefs. I don't know that there's almost anything in my current spiritual practice that if you wanted to nail me down to the meaning of the word believe, I wouldn't say that I believe in any of it. I cannot put that hard of a buy-in behind any of the actual woo-woo stuff behind my woo-woo practices. Which is very confusing to some people. Like, my sister is like, what do you mean you don't worship anything? You have an altar. I do not understand these words you speak, right? So, yeah, I have a lot of, like, I celebrate the 8 pagan Sabbats through the year and a lot of nature-based stuff. And part of me kind of thinks my shiny rocks talk to me. Not in a, like, I hear them hallucinating way, but just a sort of sense of, like, they want to keep me company or don't, or are supposed to belong to me or aren't, or things like that. And also, when I hear myself say stuff like that, some small part of my brain is like, you're sound knucking futz and also stupid, right? Like, so I have to confront these biases within myself, right? This isn't just pointed externally, right? I have a lot of bias against anything not atheist. Even when it comes to myself, I get self-judgmental for trying to lean into some of these more spiritual practices. So I'm in a really weird, transitory, transition-y, unstable, somewhat conflictual place, honestly, with my spirituality at this point in my life. But I'm glad, because it's the first time I've actually been on my own journey around my spirituality. Like, this is the places I'm exploring and experimenting are all self-motivated. A lot of the practices like tarot or throwing bones or oracle decks or other things like that I see as a good way to exercise and be an extension of, intuition, right? Being willing to trust ourselves, which is the thing I'm very bad at doing, is trusting myself. So I'm proud of the fact that I'm trying, and also it's very difficult, and I definitely can get self-judgy. What do you mean your fucking rocks are talking to you, lady? You sound like you're hallucinating, right? So I have no idea if that makes sense, Michelle, but that's I think, where I'm at. And I'm going to try and let Jin out before he, speaking of my altar, eats things on it.
Good idea. And while you're doing that, I'll transition us into talking about what it says on the handout is goals of mindfulness practice from a spiritual perspective. So DBT in this handout talks about four goals. So what's going to happen is I'm going to read one and share my thoughts on it. And then Kate's going to read one and share her thoughts on it. And we just realized from a time perspective, I mean, one or both of us, you know, we may chime in if we have something really important to say about the others, but there's just not enough time today with all the material we're going over to both share thoughts on all of the different things. So I'm going to start off with the first one here. And these goals, as they're listed on the handout, are pretty short and sweet. But there's like a lot packed in to each one. And the first one that I'm reading is actually the longest, I believe. So the first goal of mindfulness practice, it says, is to experience ultimate reality as it is, which leads to a sense of inner spaciousness and awareness of intimate wholeness with the entire universe, the transcendence of boundaries, and the ground of our being.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yep. I had to read it a few times. I was like, oh, God, that's a lot in there. And like, oh, man, how can I share my thoughts on every single thing? And I don't think I'm going to do this justice. But the way that I interpreted this one is that a lot of times, at least I think when I view mindfulness and what it means to be in the moment and be present, a lot of times what I view that as is really making an effort mentally to not be too focused on the past or too focused on the future. Right? We spend a lot of time in our brain ruminating about past events, or a lot of times worrying about things that haven't happened yet. And so I've always viewed it on this level of mindfulness is about just focusing on what you're doing, right? Like if you are grocery shopping, just focus on the experience of grocery shopping. Just focus on the aisle that you're walking down. Just focus on the next item on your list, right? That's what it means to experience reality as it is. Like you're just very concretely interacting with your environment. But this takes it to a whole new level of what it means to actually be present. And what was coming up for me reading this one, I think, is that like I was just kind of thinking about how we oftentimes, as we're going through our days, you know, we have the experience of feeling overwhelmed by all the things that we are trying to do or juggle, and we feel tired, and all that's very natural. It's part of being human. But what it's talking about here when it says experience ultimate reality as it is, which leads to a sense of inner spaciousness. Like when I was thinking about what that means to experience inner spaciousness, I was just like, that means that you would have to be like so, so, so in the present that like there isn't anything to necessarily like make you tired. And there isn't anything to like make you feel overwhelmed, because I've had these moments briefly within myself. Normally it's when I'm getting a break from my typical life. You know, I'm someplace totally different or whatever it is, where it's just kind of like, no, I'm just so, again, all of those, what's the term I'm looking for? Like participating in things, you know, one mindfully, effectively, all of that. Like you're just so in what you're, not just what you're doing, but like what you're experiencing, that like, you're so alive in it that there's no room to feel like tired. And then that's what makes you feel that spaciousness and that aliveness. And that means you're really being mindful. Again, like mindful on a different level than just like, I'm doing dishes and I'm noticing how the soap feels on my hands. Nope. This is like, different level of that, where you're really in tune with your inner experience, not just your outer experience, not just your environment that you're in, and again, the task that you're doing, but your inner experience. And that when you are able to do that, it will feel spacious. And then that leads into that you can then open yourself up, like it says, to that awareness of intimate wholeness with the entire universe, which kind of was, I don't know, when I read that, I'm just like, my mind can't contain it. Like, that's too big of an idea to imagine experiencing intimate wholeness with the entire universe. Holy crap. But, like, really, I think what it's talking about there is, like, remembering this idea, which, again, it's a woo-woo idea for sure, but I'm going to try to make sense of it here, right? Like, we are connected to all things. We are all things, all living things, all non-living things, right? Like, everything comes, I was about to say, like, comes into being, but, like, different than that. It's just you cannot exist in a vacuum. It's impossible. Anything that you interact with, any person that you interact with, there is, even if it's brief, there's this connection, and then they are connected, and then they are connected, and so on and so forth, right? And when we are really, really in this, like, deeper level of presence and connectedness, right? It's just, I don't know. I think what kind of comes to me is, like, what is there to be stressed about? Like, what is there to be stressed about when it's just kind of this awareness of just, like, oh, I'm just this one small piece of everything. I'm connected to everything. I am held by everything. Everything is just as it is and how it's meant to be. And that there's no room for stress. When you truly feel like it says that intimate wholeness with the entire universe. One of the things that I also wrote down in my notes, because it says, you know, also the transcendence of boundaries and the ground of our being. And maybe I took that too literally, right? The ground of our being. I don't think it meant it quite like this, but one of the best ways to feel that intimate wholeness with the entire universe is that we need to be out in nature. And I will own it for myself. I do not interact with nature. I'm hardly ever out in nature. I'm at a job where I sit inside all day. I drive a car. I find it difficult to find the time or energy to go on walks, especially with as pregnant as I am these days. Like, you know, I am so disconnected from nature. I'm so disconnected from the natural beauty of the world around me. And some of you may live in places where it's impossible to not be connected to nature, to interact with it. And then some of you may live in places that are, like, far more urban and just, like, you can't find a tree within miles of you, right? But boy, is that a good pathway to getting started on what it's talking about as the goal here. Get out in nature and spend some time in it. And that can do a beautiful job of reminding you that you are connected to all living things, and it can be a really nice way to transcend those boundaries and get grounded. So that's how I'm going to tackle that first goal. But yeah, I mean, these are big things that we're diving into here. So I'll turn it over to you for the second one, Kate.
As I look like at my phone, my phone has the notes on it. No, the notes are on the computer, Kate. Well, I think you did an eloquent job there, Michelle. I don't know if I can match you, but we'll see. So the second goal, much more short and sweet in word length anyway, is to grow in wisdom of the heart and of action. And the first thing that I noticed just when looking at that was that I really enjoyed the inherent duality and dialectic nature of that one, right? This idea of, you know, while these are meant to be around mindfulness as a whole, right, we get more into wise mind specifically later on in the episode, I still see a lot of wise mind in this particular goal, right? I think that heart and action could really easily relate well to reason and emotion, or doing and being. And so I really liked that idea of trying to grow in wisdom in both directions, right? In that place that's in the core of us, and also in how we take what's in the core of us and change it, or put it into action in the world around us. It also had me really thinking about what the term wisdom means. Like, what is wisdom? Right, it's carrying a lot of weight in that sentence, right? Grow in wisdom of the heart and of action. And, you know, me being a big dictionary dork, I went and looked up. I'm like, well, I know what I sort of feel or intuit or think that wisdom means, but what does the dictionary say? And it said that, or it focuses on the idea of the intersection of experience and good judgment being what wisdom entails. And that, to me, also is a wonderful, slots really wonderfully in well with mindfulness, right? This idea of being focused on the present, right? Is this focus on experience, right? What, you're not pushing anything away. You're not clinging to anything, right? This idea of just noticing non-judgmentally, there's everything about just being here is so focused on experience. And then again, thinking about the what's and hows of mindfulness, I think a lot about being effective when it comes to the idea of growing in wisdom of action, right? Of participation, or participate effectively from mindfulness, of taking this idea of whatever we're learning from our experience in the moment and translating that into action, right? Into effective, wise action. So those were my thoughts on that one, Michelle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like how you're honing in on how wise mind comes into play.
Right. I'm like, I know that it's supposed to be later, but I couldn't. I feel like I just see so much of it in that one.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. The third one says to experience freedom by letting go of attachments to the demands of your own desires, cravings, and intense emotions, and radically accepting reality as it is. So we're bringing in the concept of radical acceptance here to this one. But also, I, similarly maybe to you, this one just screamed to me, okay, we're talking about emotion mind. Right? Like when you're saying the demands of your own desires, cravings, and intense emotions. Emotion mind is all about desires, cravings, and intense emotions. And so I really viewed this goal being about trying to get to a place where you're seeing the big picture rather than just what is happening in the moment, which at first seems so counterintuitive to, again, what we typically think of mindfulness as being about, because mindfulness is so much about just be with, you know, what's the kind of the phrase, you know, accepting reality, just, I'm not going to get it right. The John Kabat-Zinn one, whatever it is.
Oh, paying attention right? On purpose to the present moment in a particular way, non-judgmentally. Yeah, that'll do.
Thank you. Yes, that, right? It's so focused on just like what is happening right in the here and the now and only focusing on that. But sometimes what's happening in the here and the now is that we're having intense desires, cravings, and emotions. And if we are really letting those run the show, we are going to get attached to them. And a key goal of mindfulness, as you just named, right? Like letting go of attachment to the judgments that we hold, right? And whether we're judging something as good or bad, you know, pleasant, unpleasant, and that kind of a thing. Mindfulness doesn't care about all of those judgments. And so what you're wanting to do here is really get to that place where you're not feeling so attached to what you may want in the present moment, because that has the potential to lead you down a path that could have further consequences later on. And that in some way, when you let go of those attachments, like it talks about experiencing freedom, I view it as if you can let go of those attachments that you're feeling so strongly right then, and you zoom out and see the big picture of things, that can then open the door to you feeling a little more free and less controlled by those things. Because I'm sure we've all had those moments where like it's so strong, where it just feels like you have no choice but to do what it's like telling you to do. but you do have a choice, right? You do have an alternative option available to you. Kate has talked about this concept many, many times on the podcast, the concept about being kind versus nice to yourself, right? Being nice sometimes is about just like, yeah, I want this thing right now and I'm going to do it because it's going to feel good for the next 5 minutes and that's all I want, right? And then there's being kind, which is like, ugh, I really don't feel like maybe cleaning the house today. I really don't feel like going for a walk or whatever it is. But it's like, but I know if I do those things, I'll probably feel better afterwards. That's being kind to yourself. Kind is more sometimes doing the things that are not pleasant or enjoyable in the moment, but they have longer term benefits for us. And nice is about just like simple little pleasures that we want to experience. And to me, this one was kind of getting into a little bit, again, like on a deeper level than what we're used to typically talking about it as, but really recognizing that when you are able to be kind to yourself, rather than always doing like the thing that may be nice, that does actually really, really serve you. By letting go of the demands of some of those things that might, you know, again, seem nice in the moment, but might add up in the long run. I can't not talk about the radical acceptance piece here at the end because it's important. So I was trying to think of like, okay, what's leading them to bring in radical acceptance to this conversation? And I think it's because like when we reach a radical acceptance place, often the only way to get there is because we've had to let go of what emotion mind might be telling us. I think I really think again, bringing in wise mind, the only way to get to radical acceptance is to first really listen to what your wise mind is saying about a situation. And so you do have to let go of what your emotion mind is telling you. Emotion mind often does not see reality as it is. I hate to say it, but that's true. Emotion mind has its own way of interpreting reality that is often not accurate. And so when we can let go of pushing for what we want, which is so much about what emotion mind, desires, then it allows us to think about, well, not even just think about, but it just invites in an experience of what could be better for us. Letting go of, again, like our own desires, all of that, then we open ourselves up to being like, okay, I know how I want things to go. I know what I want the universe to do for me, but the universe may have other ideas. And when I allow those other things to just happen exactly as they are, then I am free. Then I am free of distress and suffering because I'm not so focused on me, what I want, how I think things should go, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just open to what's unfolding and trying to just go with it and not get attached to the outcome that I really, really, really want. Because I may not get that outcome that I really, really, really want. So those are some of the things I saw packed into this one a little bit.
You're seeing such great stuff, Michelle.
Oh, thanks. I'm glad it's sounding that way. In my brain, I'm like, how do I make sense of this? Like, it feels so jumbled to me. That's so I'm glad fair. It's not coming out that way as I'm talking.
No, I like you're getting in the deeper perspective. I think I'm having a hard time seeing below the concrete level of things today, which makes sense with how my brain works. So the last one on this particular handout, the last goal is to increase love and compassion towards yourself and towards others. This one excited me because one of my favorite forms of mindfulness is mindful self-compassion, right? Is practicing mindfulness explicitly as a means of growing in compassion, specifically, in that case, aimed at oneself. I feel like mindfulness opens us up to the space of being able to increase our love and compassion towards ourselves and towards others so well, in large part because of that, you know, the tenet of being non-judgmentally aware of the present moment. Right? It's the hardest one. You know, you've heard Michelle and I talk a lot about how incredibly difficult it is to be non-judgmental. And also, when you can manage, right, there's so much more space to have compassion for yourself or someone else when you're not judging them for whatever's going on. Right? And so I feel like while it's not explicitly feel compassionate towards the thing you're being presently, you know, present awareness of, you know, that's not the actual definition of mindfulness there. I think that it is, it's compassion follows so much more closely, so much more easily on the heels of non-judgmentalness and mindfulness than it does so many other stances of ways that we might view the world. Right? In the present, we're not so much weighed down by our baggage also, right? A lot of what I'd say impedes our ability to show ourselves and others love and compassion is the baggage that we're carrying with us from our past, right? Our past hurts, our past behaviors, the past behaviors of others, right? There's so much of history that we carry into every present moment that can get in the way. Right, of us being kind, of us being compassionate, of us being loving. So just the focus on the present itself, as much as possible, I think also helps lend itself here and open you up to that increasing sense of love and compassion. I guess I was sort of seeing it as a 1-2 in my notes of where how being in the present helps us not be weighed down by baggage. And also, right, without judgment, we can better access love. I think that this also, while it doesn't explicitly talk about being mindful of others, that's a, gosh, haven't we actually gone over that recently, Michelle? I feel like that was, or was that one of the ideas that we almost did?
It's one of the ideas, but okay. I don't think we've done it yet. It would have been a much easier topic today than this one. I'm not going to lie.
Well, all right, so to be continued someday, it's on the idea list. But I do think it's something we haven't talked about as much, right? Obviously, I suppose, since we're still contemplating doing an episode on it. But I think that this, particularly this goal, lends itself well to being a goal not just of mindfulness about our environment or mindfulness about ourselves, but explicitly mindfulness of other people. Because again, that lack of baggage and that lack of judgment and that present focus attention does so much to give us that ability to tap into the love and compassion that is there naturally for ourselves and for others. That's what I thought.
Okay. So now we are switching gears, moving on to the next handout, which is all about wise mind from a spiritual perspective. So, I mean, this is just my take. I feel like the last handout with the four goals that we just named, I love it. I love everything that it talked about on the handout. And also, it's not super practical, in my opinion, right? It doesn't like give you a list of like, here's how you achieve those goals. Do this, do that, then you're going to reach these things, right? Doesn't necessarily do that. But the stuff that we're about to talk about actually maybe gives you a semi-decent pathway of things you can do that will help you first and foremost find your wise mind, because it's a handout about wise mind. But when you're finding your wise mind, you are typically inevitably being mindful. Like the two just go together. And also, as we're going through this stuff, I guess it's important as a disclaimer to name that we're actually going to be doing a little bit of psychoeducation around some different spiritual phrases and practices, things that admittedly Kate and I had to look up a little bit beforehand. We're like, some of this we know, some of this, what is it talking about? What is that word? What are we doing here, DBT? So it was a good way for us to deepen our understanding of some of the things that DBT is talking about. So we're going to add in some information as we go, while also sharing our thoughts too on these ones for what we think the value is, or to just expand on what we think they're saying on the handout. So there's three different boxes. So I'm going to read the first one here, which talks first and foremost about how you can practice wise mind as a contemplative practice. And it lists off five ways that this can look. So they say wise mind as a contemplative practice can look like 1, mindfulness. 2, meditation. 3, contemplative prayer. 4, contemplative action. And 5, centering prayer. So I actually think I'm going to touch on those things first before I move on to the rest of the stuff that it says in this box, because I really appreciated it breaking it down into these 5 different ways that it can look. I mean, I'll be honest, Kate and I, we've included this handout for years as an extra handout in our mindfulness week of group, but we've been very hesitant, I think, to talk about any of this out of fear that it will come across as like we're pushing religion on people. You know, anytime DBT uses the word prayer, I think Kate and I both kind of be like, stay away from that. We're just not going to go there. But let's go here a little bit and talk about what this actually means. So I had to look up the difference between contemplative prayer and centering prayer. I had no idea what those two terms meant. So I'll explain it a little bit before I move on to the other stuff they're talking about in this box. But the difference is that centering prayer is when you use a mantra or some other word or phrase to help you, you know, literally, like center and feel connected to a higher power. And then that actually can create space for you to then move into contemplative prayer. And that contemplative prayer is meant to be like this opening up and being with a higher power in silence so that you can receive wisdom. That's what I learned in doing my research into both those things. So you'll see this, I think, sometimes. Like, I don't know, I'll go with a really stereotypical example from the Episcopal Church, because that's what I was raised in. But we'll say things like, in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, and we'll like cross ourselves, right? That would probably be an example of like, it's a brief, but like a centering prayer. Because that's just like a mantra. That's just a phrase you use. And then you would move into something deeper than that, which would be contemplative prayer. What I also really liked, because I still think there's a lot of misconceptions about prayer. And I liked when it talked about how contemplative prayer is about like being with a higher power in silence. And you are waiting to receive the wisdom or the message from that higher power. Because at least the idea of prayer that I grew up with was that you pray to God to get what you want. That's what you do, right? You go to God and you say, and you know, you close your eyes and you fold your hands and you're like, dear God, pretty please help me do well on my test tomorrow, right? Amen. Nope. That's not what we're talking about here. And I want to be clear about that. This isn't about going to a higher power.
It's not a beseeching prayer.
Yeah, beseeching prayer. That's a good way to phrase it, right? Or like, you know, having it be that you're bringing what you want. No, this is about being fully open to whatever wisdom you may receive as you just sit in silence and make space. And I liked that a lot. So those are some of the differences there. I had also looked up like a little bit about like contemplative action. It was a little harder to find things on that. But basically it's just kind of, I think, this idea that after you have like a contemplative prayer experience, then you would then take the wisdom that you received while you were praying, and then you would put it into action and kind of like carry
it. It's not things like maybe like walking the labyrinth or things like that. Would that count, do you think?
I mean, I think that would definitely count, because I mean, you are doing like a physical
right
action where you're kind of like getting into more of like a, I don't know, like a Zen mindful state of mind. Yeah. So I think it could definitely like encompass practices like that as well. I love walking labyrinths, by the way. I really enjoy doing that. So it also says in this box, when we're talking about contemplative practice, it says thoughts, attitudes, and actions designed to help us express or experience connection to. And then I'm about to list a whole lot of names and phrases for higher power. So just sit back and listen and see what resonates with you. So designed to help us express or experience connection to the sacred, the divine within, the transcendent, God, the great spirit, the absolute, Elohim, the nameless one, Brahma, Allah, Parvardigar, ultimate reality, the totality, the source, our essential nature, our true self, the core of our being, the ground of being, no self, emptiness. So again, I'm going to throw in some psychoeducation here. If some of those you're like, what are you talking about? I don't know what those phrases are, Michelle. So Elohim is Hebrew. So that's a Hebrew word for God. Brahma comes from a Buddhist term for God. Allah is Islam's term for God. And then Parvardigar is rooted in Hinduism as a term for God. So all of those words mean God, just in from different religious backgrounds and different languages. But my hope is that as I was reading that list, and you might want to rewind and listen to it again, just skip back a couple seconds. I don't care whether you believe in a higher power or not. My hope is that some term, some phrase from that list resonated with you. Because some of those phrases, again, explicitly relate to God or a higher being of some kind. But I'm hoping there's something there that feels like, yeah, that's what I would want to connect to if I'm doing a contemplative practice. If I am practicing mindfulness or meditation or contemplative prayer, contemplative action or centering prayer, those five things they listed, my goal would be to create space to be with one of those terms or one of those experiences. So that's my hope, is that one or more resonate with you. Because again, I think we talk a lot about the idea, which is true. It is true what we say all the time about like mindfulness can be done anytime, anywhere, doing anything. It's true. But when we're talking about like, if you really want to connect with your wise mind in an intentional way, if that's a goal that you have for yourself, you can't necessarily do any of those contemplative practices while engaging with something else. It's not going to work that way. Like, you may actually need to press the pause button on your life for at least a couple minutes to really do one of those contemplative practices, with the goal being to get in touch with and be with one of those terms that I named. You can't do contemplative practice, even though they do say mindfulness is one of them, right? Like, I truly believe, again, like, you need to like pause everything else. You don't have to do it with your eyes closed or anything like that necessarily. It doesn't have to be like in true silence, I think, to feel those things, but you have to be willing to just be like, I'm going to stop everything else I'm doing to do this contemplative practice right now. And hopefully what will happen is that if you feel like you are, again, able to connect with that higher experience, then you are finding your wise mind. So that's what we're talking about there with how you can find it through contemplative practice. So hopefully that's making sense.
All right. Are we on to my thing?
Yes. Let's go on to your thing.
So this next box, right, the one you were reading, Michelle, is all about, like, wise mind as a, right, like what kind of practice or what things you can do. This one is wise mind experience from a spiritual perspective. So I took this to be really talking about what it feels like, right, like what it is to be in your wise mind from a spiritual perspective. So this one reads, experience where a deeper layer of reality rises to consciousness. A reality that has always been there but has been misperceived. An experience of expansion of consciousness. The experience of unity and oneness with the sacred. So a lot of what I noticed in this one is, I don't know, I think when... all right. Michelle, I too can form English sentences today. I swear.
This is a tough one. I, like, there's so much packed into these couple sentences. So, like, I don't envy you trying to explain this one because this one's tough.
Well, I mean, there's, like, explain and also just, like, what it spoke to for me. But I'm just trying to figure out how to even phrase shit. One of the things you and I struggle with, I think, perennially, is trying to describe, like, how do you know you're there? Right. How do I know I've reached my wise mind? Right. And we try so many different ways. Like, here are, like, the types of thoughts you might have. Here are the physical sensations you might have. Here are the, like, this, that, the other thing. I feel like we try to give as many different cues, right, that people might be able to notice within themselves as possible for that being able to identify, right, like what wise mind is or feels like or is the, what that experience is for them. And so that's what I first saw from this is a channel or an angle of attack. Jesus, what confrontational language, Kate. A direction for explaining what that experience is that maybe is a lens that I haven't personally put on it before, right? Like I don't think I've used any of these phrases or even something adjacent to them to help people look inside themselves or better understand what it would be like to experience wise mind. And so to me, this is a wonderful tool. First of all, I will probably, even if I don't like specifically reference this handout, I will probably be wrapping some of the stuff from here into my future explanations of what wise mind is or feels like as one way that people might notice it in themselves. Because I do think that, for me at least, one of the reasons that I connected to this is that I see this often, I don't want to put that, this seems to be like a spiritual way of understanding or experiencing the physical sensations that I at least often associate with my mind. So I could see a way that these more spiritual terms are ways of seeing things connected to me with what shows up for me with wise mind, this idea of clarity, of connection, right? I think like a lot of these are things that I think of wise mind as bringing, no matter how you find it or what you know, how you notice it in yourself, right? Is clarity, connection, and being able to see and know what's really there under all the noise, right? We're always thinking things or experiencing things. There's always the noise of experience. And one of the things that I think wise mind is intended or designed to do is help us slip under that noise, right? Into like deeper truths about ourselves or the world around us, right? And I think that idea of like a reality that has always been there but has been misperceived, I really liked that way of looking at that. This idea of like, you already know the truth, right? Your wise mind is always there, right? that reality, that awareness, that information is always there. You just maybe haven't noticed it, right? You haven't been able to perceive it with that same kind of clarity or that same kind of connectedness. So I really appreciated that. I know that a lot of people, like myself, most of the time, come to wise mind from a more secular perspective. I really think that this does honestly, to me, this might be my favorite box of both handouts. Because I just think that it's the clearest of just like, hey, here's a way that you can use that spiritual lens to recognize, right, this state of being. And I think that, for me, that's also the closest I come to what feels like a quote-unquote spiritual experience to me is a idea of that connectedness to unity or oneness, or like you were talking about actually on the first box of that last page, that, you know, the incredibly long first thing you had to do.
Where we started.
Where we started, right? That unity and oneness. And I think this speaks to that, right? That beautiful idea of connectedness to the sacred, right? And also loops back around to a little bit of what you were just saying with those ideas of what might be the higher power, right? Some of those being right, our true self or our essential nature, right? There's so many different things that we can label as sacred, right? And it may just be ourselves, right? Your sacred thing, your higher power may just be yourself, right? And so I love that this gives space for spirituality, but also space for spirituality to look like whatever the hell you want it to look like, right? From more, I know this may sound contradictory, but for more secular spirituality, which is sort of where I hang out, to deeply religious spirituality, right? And I think everything in between. So I just thought that this was a beautiful way to put before people a picture of what they might recognize in themselves as they enter into Wise Mind, if a sort of spiritual bent or connection is what they're looking to find there, or just how they find their Wise Mind most easily. Mm-hmm. Really hope any of that made any fucking sense.
No. Yeah, that's great. I love all of that. Okay, so we're going to get into the last box, which is a big box on the handout. And before I read really anything of what it says on the box, I thought it might be helpful to, again, give a little bit of psychoeducation here about what we're talking about. So what it talks about on the DBT handout, it says Wise Mind from the perspective of mysticism. And then when we get back to the handout in a moment, we are going to be reading the 7 characteristics of mystical experiences. But I figured there might be some people listening going, I don't know what the hell mysticism is. What are you guys talking about, right? I don't know. For me, when I hear like the word mystical, I think of like unicorns and fairies. that's just what I think of. That's all what we're talking about here. So thanks to our good friend Wikipedia, I'm just going to directly read some information that I found just verbatim about how we could define mysticism so we know what we're talking about before we get into what the DBT handout says. So it says, mysticism is popularly known as becoming one with God or the absolute, but may refer to any kind of ecstasy or altered state of consciousness which is given a religious or spiritual meaning. It may also refer to the attainment of insight in ultimate or hidden truths and to human transformation supported by various practices and experiences. There was another little bit I found that said, since the 19th century, mystical experience has evolved as a distinctive concept. It is closely related to mysticism, but lays sole emphasis on the experiential aspect, be it spontaneous or induced by human behavior, whereas mysticism encompasses a broad range of practices aiming at a transformation of the person, not just inducing mystical experiences. So what the DBT handout talks about, and what I'm about to read, it lists out 7 characteristics of what a mystical experience can be and look like. So more or less what DBT is getting at here is that if you are having a mystical experience, you are likely in touch with your Wise Mind while that's happening, and that this may be how it could feel or how it could look for you. And then after I read through these 7 things, Kate and I are both going to share our thoughts. And we're also really going to get some practical examples because both of us have had our own like unique mystical experiences in a way. So that may help this become a little more concrete as we talk about like how we've seen this show up for ourselves. So the 7 characteristics of mystical experiences that DBT talks about. Number 1, it's a direct experience. Experience without words of ultimate reality. Number 2, it's an experience of unity. Awareness of oneness and of no distance between oneself, reality, and all other beings. Number 3, It is without words. Experience of reality that cannot be grasped and can only be described with metaphors and stories. Number four, it is certain. During the experience, certainty of the experience is total, undeniable, and clear. Number five, it is practical. Experience that is concretely beneficial to one's life and well-being. Number six, it is integrative. Experience that establishes harmony of love, compassion, mercy, kindness, a quieting of extreme emotions. Number seven, ooh, this is a tough word. It is sapiential.
Did I say that right, Kate?
Yeah. Okay, good. An experience that leads to wisdom, enhances capacity for intuitive knowledge. This is a lot, but all of that is encompassed with what we're talking about with having a mystical experience or experiencing mysticism. So how do you make sense of all this, Kate? What are your thoughts on this box here?
Yeah, I'll get to that in just a sec. Have you ever heard the term, Michelle, sapiosexual? Turned on by wisdom, thought, intelligence. It's not an actual quote-unquote sexual orientation. Oh. It's like a joking thing to say about yourself. I'm a sapiosexual, which is like I'm turned on by intelligent people.
Oh, interesting.
Anyway, sorry, total aside, that has nothing to do with anything, except for my brain. That's what it has to do with. No, it was really funny, Michelle, because I have never... I think that's accurate. I have never applied the word mysticism or mystical or anything of that root to anything having to do with me, my life, or my life experiences ever.
And probably preparing for this podcast episode, right?
Yeah. No, seriously. Reading this, I was like, oh, that's the best description of what I consider something like my spirituality. Now, you know my brain well enough. There's not really such a thing as experiencing anything wordlessly, right, for me, because... that's the only shape my thoughts are in is words, right? Like without my ability to picture or hear things or other stuff in my brain. So some of it, I missed the mark a little bit because my brain just doesn't function that way. But otherwise, a lot of this ties into what I feel or I'm looking to feel from a lot of my, I've been calling them my spiritual practices. Perhaps I'm supposed to call them my mystical practices now. I don't know. So you were talking about like concrete experiences when I was looking at this list, the experiences that I've had in life where I think I got the closest to or most checked the most of these seven boxes, perhaps, is first and foremost being outdoors naked. The eight Sabbaths of the year, one of the ways that I celebrate or observe those is there's this little bitty patch in the corner of my yard where I can be naked unobserved. By any neighbors or traffic. And so no matter what the weather is, right, because these are every 6 weeks throughout the year, no matter what the weather is, I go and I lay out naked for as long as I can tolerate, depending on the weather. And that to me is just a huge amount of that connectedness, right, to all things, that oneness, that part of nature, that like so much of what we've talked about through both of these handouts show up for me in those moments is some of the most mindful I get. Right, is in those periods of time where I'm just in my body and in the moment and in nature, right, being naked. I've also had the opportunity a couple of times to be able to go naked into the ocean, like at night, in the moonlight, the whole thing, and that just feels like coming home, right, like coming to a mother, right, like kind of thing. And the other place that I think I've most consistently experienced something like this is during singing practices. Sometimes solo singing, sometimes singing by myself can do it. More commonly, though, is when I've sung as a part of a choir or some other group. That sense of... Yeah, see, I don't have words for it, right? Being connected in song in a way that I don't... I just want to start gesturing at my body or my chest or other things because it's an experience. There you go. It's the closest I come to experience without words, right? Not that I don't have words, but I don't know how to give them to other people's brains in a way that actually describes what I'm experiencing. So those are the ways that I think I've noticed it the most is through singing and through natural nudity, nudity in nature. And honestly, I think all of those things, both of those things, right? Being naked outside and singing are probably the fastest and most direct ways for me to reach a form of wise mind. Now, I would say that stereotypically we talk about wise mind as a way of making decisions, right? Like, as a, like, what does my wise mind have to say about buying this car or not? I don't know, right? Like, dumping my boyfriend.
That's a good one, yeah.
Oh, right? I don't know that being naked outside or singing helps me reach decisions like that. Like, that's not quite the flavor of wise mind that I think it pulls me into. I would say that it's more wise mind as this, like, whole state of being, or wise mind around my whole life and my whole being, right? This more all-encompassing wise mind than just about this one topic, right? But more about me, like, wise mind of myself, right? Like, my whole self. And isn't it interesting that I feel, I don't know if you feel this way, Michelle, but I feel my most self, right? Like, most in and of and aware of my individual being when I feel the most interconnected to other beings, right? When I lose my individuality is actually where I find it the most. In that sense of, like, one of the things I say sort of mantra-like to myself when I'm outside naked on the Sabbats is, I am not apart from nature, I am a part of nature. Mm. Right? And I just say that to myself over and over again, right? As a sort of mantra, which I think you'll talk about in a minute here, right? Of just this reminder, like, I'm not a separate thing. Like, I'm not. I know we have electricity and clothes and walls and all these other things that make us think that we're separate. But we're not so much. And that reminder that we're not actually helps me feel very at home in myself. So I have no idea if that much self-reflection was what you intended us to talk about here, but that's me. That's what I've got.
Yeah. No, it's all great what you're saying. I was kind of thinking of starting in the same place with being like, okay, well, what kind of mystical experiences have I had? What have those looked like for me? My therapist also does hypnotherapy work. And so pretty early on after I started meeting with her, which I have been meeting with my therapist, holy crap, about 8 years. Since 2016, I've been going to my therapist for quite a while, but pretty early on in our work, she started introducing me to doing hypnotherapy sessions. And I certainly don't do them all the time. Now I maybe do one or two a year. But when you're doing hypnotherapy work, I mean, you are experiencing an altered state of consciousness. That's what's needed to do the work and to see what comes up for you. And so I think that in and of itself makes it feel like more of a mystical experience, because let me tell you guys, the thinking part of my brain is turned off. It's gone. It's not there anymore. And I've experienced things also, like with doing breath work. So there's different types of breath work that exist, but I've done, why am I blanking on the name? I think it's called holotropic breath work. Anyways, it can definitely induce an altered state of consciousness for you. So I'm going to talk about some woo-woo things, but like, I have had rebirthing experiences. I have experienced past life regressions. I have experienced a lot of things doing breath work that there's no way that I would have experienced without being in an altered state of consciousness that gets induced by the type of breathing that you're doing. And maybe a little less as an altered state of consciousness, but when I've done my focusing work, it's just this deeper dropping into my body and noticing what's happening within my body in a way that as I go about my day, I just don't pay attention to. I never really notice what my body is telling me for the most part, as I'm just so busy in the hustle and bustle of what my life looks like. But when I'm focusing, I'm pausing everything else and I'm dropping into, what am I noticing within my body? What is it trying to tell me? And trust me, some of my focusing sessions have been really bizarre. And they don't make any logical, practical sense. I mean, it's truly what I would say is like a daydream, right? I am awake, but it is like I am dreaming. That's kind of like the state of consciousness that it feels like I'm in. And I have had some of my most powerful experiences of finding my wise mind and doing those practices. Absolutely. I have received messages from, yeah, my wise adult self or my wise mind. Or again, like for me, because I identify my higher power as God, I would say messages from God. That's how it's felt for me in these experiences that like I would not have probably gotten if I hadn't practiced these things. So, you know, Kate, you were touching on this, and I'm glad you were touching on it, which is that it's not that I think we've talked about wise mind in a wrong or bad way all of these years. I don't think we're wrong for how we have talked about wise mind, but it is true that we really do talk about wise mind as like, okay, when you're struggling with something, find your wise mind and seek out an answer. And we really have only talked about that the path to wise mind, you know, oftentimes it might involve some kind of meditation, or it might involve, you know, a deeper reflecting that's going on. But if I really honestly think about it, I do believe it's very hard to like, quote unquote, like think or like talk your way into wise mind. Like, it's just not, it's not something as clear cut. Like I wrote down in my notes, I'm like, a pros and cons or like check the facts worksheet isn't going to be the path to really getting there, to finding your wise mind. It's not. And I'm not trying to throw shade on those skills, because those skills can be very, very helpful and very needed to help us make effective decisions in the moment, which is ultimately what wise mind is about, right? On one level, wise mind is about making sure that you are choosing an effective option and doing something that is skillful, to use some DBT terms there. And pros and cons and check the facts can absolutely help you do that. But it's like you said, Kate, it's not just about like, oh, I am in touch with my wise mind briefly and then I go on throughout my day. This is about just like, how do I embody wise mind? How do I just like live with it? Not just like visit it for an afternoon, but like, how do I live with my wise mind? And again, you can't engage in these practices all day, every day, right? You're not laying outside naked for, I mean, maybe sometimes you are, for hours and hours and hours and hours, but
rare is the weather that's good enough for that.
Exactly. You might only be out there for like 10 minutes, but yes, that experience is so mystical and powerful for you that the impact of it stays.
Yes. Yep.
It sticks in like the rest of your day and maybe the days to come. And that's what the power is of finding your wise mind through spiritual practices. And I mean, there's all kinds of spiritual practices that I feel like, you know, like you mentioned, Kate, how like you do tarot cards. And I mean, you've gotten me into stones, even though I don't nearly commune with my stones as much as I used to. But there's all kinds of practices. One of the things that like I personally really want to try for myself with my history of being a ballet dancer, I really want to do what's called ecstatic dance.
I was hoping you were going to say that.
Yeah, I've never done it. And I know somebody who is like very prominent in the local like ecstatic dance community here in Washington. And like, I just think I would love it.
I'd go with you.
That's exactly what it sounds. Yeah, you can come with me, right? We could do it together. But like the music is on and you just move your body. You just move. But probably at some point in that experience, whether you intend to or not, you are probably going to experience some kind of an altered state of consciousness. Just naturally, if you do it long enough and really let the music like seep into your body and stuff like that. Yeah, that can be another great practice. So there's so many, like there's so many ways. And I hope that for those of you listening, it intrigues you and you're like, I want to try something out for myself to see what it looks like. But in order to do that, the note that I'll end on before we get into our takeaways is like, you have to have an openness to being with things that may not make sense, because it's not going to make sense. Like mystical experiences don't make sense. Like being with things that are not going to make sense and seeing what comes without being in the driver's seat. which can be kind of scary. Like, I was scared my first hypnotherapy session. I'm like, what's going to happen to me? Right? And, you know, just really being open to trusting the process of what you're doing. It's super, super important to get the most benefit from it. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll end there and turn it over to you for your takeaway, Kate.
Yeah, perhaps I'm wilting, guys. Michelle can probably, you guys don't get to see what I look like while Michelle is talking, for her having to keep her concentration while I'm wilting over here. But the main thing that I noticed, is just honestly, I expected to have more of an issue with these handouts. Like, I expected to find them, I'll be honest, distasteful a little bit, right? Rubbing me the wrong way, right? I expected to feel more willful. Perhaps it's a good way of putting it in DBT terms. I expected to feel more willful when I encountered these handouts. In large part because I still, because of that, in no small part because of my own prejudices, I still tend to confuse religion and spirituality. Right? Like, my brain will often throw those terms around interchangeably when they're not. Right? You can be religious without being spiritual. You can be spiritual without being religious. You can be both at the same time. Right? Like, all of those are options. And so I was just, I think the thing that stood out to me most was that I liked it. Right? That I liked a lot of what it had to say. And I found it surprisingly reflective of a lot of what I would say are my more recent spiritual, or I guess perhaps mystical experiences. And that I'm, whether or not, again, whether or not I like actually go over this handout with folks in future, well, actually I might in the, because I'm going to be doing a mindfulness only group actually in the summer. So now that I think about it, I probably will. But in my normal, you know, just mindfulness being the second week of every groups, I may not ever go over this handout because there's a lot to fucking go over that night. But there was enough that I liked in here that I think I will be integrating some of the ideas that were on these handouts the next time I go to teach Wise Mind and Mindfulness. So that's nice. It's not every day that I come away from the handouts with something new, considering how much you and I have kind of beaten most of the handouts to death over the years. So I was just gratified to be less bothered and more well-served, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. My takeaway, I think, kind of on the note of your takeaway, where you're just kind of like, my takeaway is that I liked it, right? Like, there wasn't necessarily a particular thing where it's like, oh, it was when that was said. No. That's what I'm going to remember, right? Like, that wasn't it for you. Mine is kind of similar. I think my takeaway is like, God, I need to get back to my practices.
Yeah.
Because one of the times for me that I was most spiritually connected was when I was pregnant with my son.
I remember.
I was, you know, I was meditating every morning. I was doing yoga, like, at least once a week. I was doing so many things to prepare my mind and my body for labor and motherhood, and I was so spiritually connected. And then, you know, get that crying little baby in your arms and life takes off and it hasn't slowed down. And I've just gotten so caught up in the to-do list of every day. There is so much to do in every day. It never feels like there's enough time. I get so little time to myself. And what I'm taking away from today is that I actually really want to get back, even if it's just briefly, because I was saying this when I'm like, hey guys, yeah, that's great. Mindfulness anytime, anywhere, doing anything. You know, I was like, but that's not what we're talking about here. Not today. So it's not what we're talking about. We're talking about carving out space to really connect with something, again, like higher and greater than yourself, even if that is just your highest self, right? Like, that's what we're talking about. You have to actually do something, you know, one of those contemplative practices or like having a mystical experience, right? Like, you need to do something to get there. and not in like a doing mind sort of way. But boy, I'm not doing any spiritual practices. I'm just not.
In what world am I doing more spiritual stuff than you? That feels so weird.
No, I think you absolutely probably are. The last spiritual thing I probably did, well, I did a random like 4-minute meditation the other day from my pregnancy app, just randomly. But I mean, it was probably when you were over at my house, Kate, we pulled some tarot cards together.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Just like a month or two ago. But no, I'm not doing anything to connect to my spiritual life. Nothing. I'm just not. When I wake up in the morning, I just want to sit there and watch TV for a little bit before my son wakes up. Like, that's all I want to do. That's all I have the energy for. And I so hesitate to like engage in any kind of practice because I'm like, well, what if he wakes up while I'm in the middle of it? Mm-hmm. You know, which again, kids are unpredictable. You never know quite when they're going to wake up. But my takeaway from today is like, I miss it. Mm-hmm. And I want to figure out a way to get back to it. And I don't know what that looks like when I'm about to become a mom of 2 pretty soon. Like, I don't know what it looks like, but I want to actually really try to find it and keep this stuff in the front of my mind moving forward. So that's my takeaway. I miss my spiritual practices and I want to find them again.
Bye. Yeah, you know me, Michelle, I like how you've been focusing on the, like, actually take time and do a real thing. And I'm not undermining that in the slightest, but as your mm-hmm. personal rock coach, you could try just putting one in your pocket. I'm just saying. Take one with you every day.
Yeah, that is true, right? And that's a good reminder, right? Taking time to do the thing. Taking time might be like 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, taking time doesn't have to mean a lot of time.
Yeah, I mean, if you can, please give it to yourself. But if you can't, don't forego entirely, right? Which I understand. Yeah. I am also prone to foregoing entirely if I cannot do the whole thing I want to do.
Yep, that's very much me as well. I'm just kind of like, I can't do it for 30 minutes and there's no point.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's bullshit. But like, yep. It's letting go of
just having a little touchstone in your pocket all day, right? That you can just reach into and have a little connection with if you wanted to. Because I like shiny rocks.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just like drawing one each morning and like 30 seconds with that stone and then start my day, you know, that kind of thing.
But no, I appreciate you. I think it's good to emphasize that while we do emphasize the anytime, anywhere, any place, that doesn't mean we're discouraging more formal or longer term, right? Like practices like this.
Yep. Sometimes they are needed. That's for sure. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about coffee hour before a closing moment. So coffee hour is coming up on April 1st. Yes, April Fool's Day. No, it's not a joke. It will actually be on April 1st. Ironically, that is when I've been telling all my clients my maternity leave is starting, which is true. That is when my maternity leave is starting, first seeing people in my practice. But I've had like 3 or 5 clients be like, ha ha, Michelle, April Fools. And I'm like, I really didn't think about the fact that it was falling on April Fool's Day. So anyways, that's the date of coffee hour. And Kate and I, the last few months, right, we have covered mindfulness skills. We have covered distress tolerance skills and emotion regulation skills. And now in April, as our last coffee hour before I take leave from the podcast, we'll be talking about interpersonal effectiveness skills. And the way that we've been talking about all this stuff the last few months is basically, excuse me, in case you've missed coffee hours, what we're doing is basically we are making a crap ton of copies from the manual so that you have all the handouts that you need for leading groups, doing this work with clients individually, all the handouts that we feel are most important. And we're, again, not teaching what the skills are, because we're assuming you already have an idea of what they are, but we're just sharing with people who are attending coffee hours all the stuff that, like, it doesn't say on the handouts. All the stuff that we're like, so here's, okay, yep, dear man, great to talk about it like that. Here's the stuff where people tend to really struggle with this skill. And here are the things that you want to make sure you talk about and teach to your clients so that you can hopefully get ahead of these roadblocks and barriers for them. So we're wrapping it up with interpersonal effectiveness, and then we won't be doing things for a while. While I'm on leave, we'll be coming back. I don't even want to put like a date exactly, or what it's going to look like, because Kay and I are busy contemplating what things will look like after my leave. But basically, yeah, this is going to be our last coffee hour for a while. And so we'd love to have you join us live. But if you can't attend live and you're still wanting to learn all that we have to say about how to do the interpersonal effectiveness stuff with clients, sign up anyways, because you're going to get the replay afterwards if you can't attend live. And if you're really curious in getting some of the other past recordings, just email us and we're happy to get those to you. So then you can have a complete set of talking about all four of the different modules and that kind of a thing. So that's coffee hour coming up April 1st.
Okay. Yeah. I will try. I'm going to try into closing moment, guys.
You're going to try. Okay.
I'm going to try.
I'm excited for your closing moment idea.
I think it's a great idea, and there are me's that have historically existed that would do a great job executing it. We'll see if one of those me's is the me that is here today.
I think you'll do great. I will, not to put pressure on you, but everybody listening, when Kay and I were talking at the beginning before we actually pressed record, and Kay was like, this is what I was thinking of for closing moment, but I don't know if I'll feel well enough to do it. I told her, I was like, I love your closing moment idea. I don't feel up to doing it because I know that Kate will do, even in the state that you're in, Kate, I think you're going to do an amazing job. So we had some plan Bs for closing moment. If I was going to wind up leading it, that aren't nearly as good as Kate's idea. So we're going to drop into the woo-woo, everybody. It's going to be a really great closing moment.
It's true. Drop into the woo-woo. I like it.
We're getting into the woo-woo.
Let me get settled in my seat too, guys, because I have been literally wilting, and that's not a good position for doing closing moments, so, okay. Start by just getting into a comfortable position. Whatever that means for you today, sitting, standing, laying down. Whatever feels good and right to your body. And to begin with, we're going to start by just noticing our breath. You don't need to breathe any more slowly or any more deeply than you are naturally. It's just about tuning in, about focusing in and really paying attention to the rhythms and the sensations of your breath and letting them welcome you into your body and into the present moment. So for today's exercise, I'd like you each to take a moment and contemplate, how are you actually different? How are you different from the chair you're sitting on or the floor you're walking on? How are you different from any other humans or animals who may be in your home with you? How are you different from the plants and animals and other people who are busy making their lives everywhere around us and on the planet? How are you different from the trees? How are you different from the ocean? How are you different from the sky? My guess is that you think you have easy and immediate answers for how you're different from all of these things. How you're not an inanimate object. How you are not as vast as the ocean. How you are not any other kind of animal but a human animal. How you are certainly not a plant. And I would challenge you that you're wrong. That yes, of course you are different from all of these things on so many different surface levels. You are not made of wood. You cannot photosynthesize. And yet, are you different? In the end, we are all, every living and non-living thing, is all made of the same stuff.
At the deepest levels of existence that we are aware of, there is no particular difference between you and the chair you're sitting on, and the earth your whole house is sitting on, and the oceans that hug the continents, and the stars in the sky. Truly, you are the same. And in that sameness lies connection, lies continuity, lies unity. And so I invite you to take a moment to breathe into that space. To breathe into that connectedness, to breathe into that sameness. Take a moment and see if your boundaries can dissolve just a little. See if your edges can come a little loose. See if you can blend just a little bit into the air around you, into your clothes, into the furniture, into the plants and animals that may be sharing your space. Breathe and breathe into your expansiveness. Breathe into your sameness. It's so easy to notice the differences. But they're not all that's there. And taking a moment to relax into the true and honest interconnectivity that you have with everything, living and non, that you come in contact with or ever will. See if you can relax into being supported as a piece of the universe. And when you feel ready, you can start to gather yourself back up into your particular human shape. But while doing that, see if you can keep just a thread of that sense of connectedness. See if you can notice still after you open your eyes that you are a part of, not apart from, the rest of everything. But for now, go ahead and come back into the room and into your body and take a couple of deep breaths, perhaps, or rotate your shoulders, wrists, neck, or ankles. Whatever feels good and right in your body. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
To learn more about us and the DBT skills we're teaching each week, join our Facebook group. Simply log in to your Facebook profile and search for DBT and Me podcast.